Welcome to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast with founders Stan Campbell and Mike Darter. If you're forced to fight the battle for your life, CCW Safe will fight the battle for your future.
All right, welcome back to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast. I'm Mike Darter in Oklahoma City.
And I'm Stan Campbell. I'm holding down Los Angeles right now.
Dan's back in L.A.
In L.A.
What travel you got coming up, Stan?
Well, I just got back from Florida. We're going to talk about that with Bob in a minute. But I got an Oklahoma City run. And then after that, we have a business run with CCW Safe, a business retreat in St. Lucia.
That's it for a while?
Yeah, it's enough. I'm tired.
You've been gone for a while, man. You're out in Vegas for what, 2-3 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I've been really, I mean, and that was a great time too. You know, I don't know if we put this on podcast yet, but, you know, we were doing some stuff with FTA and we're doing some stuff, you know, preparing for the HR 218 plan with Dave Spaulding. And we got the guys together from FTA. And it was a great time. And every time we're with those, you know, amazing instructors, we learn so much from them.
Mm-hmm.
I really wish that, you know, it was official, you know, the behind the scenes when Larry Vickers was just kind of breaking down, you know, certain firearms in the gun industry and the changes and stuff. And that was just kind of us just talking. But I wish we could have got some of that recorded. He's amazing.
I know. I wish we would have gotten some of that too. Next year, maybe we'll, if we do the same thing or something similar, we'll have some video rolling on a lot more than what we did this year.
Absolutely.
So today we are going to talk with Bob O'Connor. Bob, how you doing?
Doing great, thank you. How about you all?
Good, man. It's good to have you back on. It's been a while.
Well, thank you for having me. I can't. I always enjoy talking about concealed carry and the great products and services that CCW Safe provides. So, thank you for having me.
Thanks.
Yeah. So Mike, what I thought today, you know, I want Bob to kind of go over his kind of give us a brief walk over of his article series, The Principles of Concealed Carry, because it was a great, and we got a lot of awesome feedback from members who are citizens and police, you know, as well.
Right.
You know, and they really appreciated, you know, his articles. So we are going to discuss those in a minute, but I wanted to, because Mike wasn't able to make it down to Orlando, you know, Bob O'Connor was gracious enough to assist us with a presentation at the Central Florida's Rifle and Pistol Club in Orlando. Shout out to Yvonne, the coordinator of Ladies Day. That'll be coming up, you know, this April 13th, I believe, in Orlando at the same location. And she brought together about 50 people, you know, that are part of the club. And, you know, kind of impromptu, we were in the neighborhood. We decided to bring together because we had Stephen Maddox with us, we had Don West, we had Gary Eastridge, myself, and then I also invited Bob O'Connor to speak. And Bob, I wanted to get your opinion because we did that class a little bit different. That presentation was a little different than what we normally do because Stephen was there. And that's your first time hearing the story. So can you kind of go over, you know, tell me what you felt about the presentation and the messages that we delivered?
Well, I'll tell you what. I thought that Stephen's story is so incredible. Stephen's story is just evocative in so many ways because of how it occurred and the overall seriousness of obviously the nature of the incident and how that evolved for him personally and legally. For those of you who have not read the story, of course, it's on the CCW Safe website. I believe it's a podcast also. But Stephen's story is just heart-wrenching in what he went through. And I had heard and read it on the website, but I had never met Stephen. And what a just a down-to-earth, genuine individual that he is. And I was so impressed by his presentation, as were, I think, everybody in the room, because I think the way he presents it, everybody in that room could have been him. And that's the way he presents it. He presents it as, look, this can happen to you. If it can happen to me, it can happen to you. And that was what I took away from that. And I think that's so powerful for everybody who listens to it.
Absolutely. And once again, you know, I appreciated you, just stepping in and helping us out to give your perspective, especially because those are all Florida residents. And I really wanted them to hear from you from a, an investigator's, perspective in Florida, because that's really where most of your law enforcement had taken place. And you know, the hundreds of investigations that you did with law enforcement and also citizens, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah, so we were really happy to present that, and thanks for coming through. Now, I want to revisit before we jump into your principles. We left off the last podcast, and you guys were kind of talking about media and some of the challenges that the media presents. And you know, you both gave an opinion. You, on top of you, Michael and Bob talked about how, you know, at this point in your life, you have a distrust for media and, you know, their agendas and what they represent. I wanted to step back because I don't know if we really got a chance to talk about, you know, the true challenges that you faced, you know, when the Zimmerman trial turned into the case turned into a highly political national push for something to be done. And they wanted to use this as an example. And they actually challenged you and the fact that you didn't arrest him at the time. So kind of go through that with us just a little bit and also kind of talk about some of the, some of the falsehoods that were presented, like, you know, the picture of him and different things like that.
Right. Well, To put all of that in perspective, and I think somewhat in fairness, and I'm not trying to segue away from that, but somewhat in fairness to what we know about the law enforcement relationship with the media, we're generally told if we don't tell the media anything, they're going to take whatever they're told from someone else or make it up and make it their story. The other side of that, and I think I mentioned this in the last podcast, was that as a homicide investigator, you don't want to give everything out. You know, the media is looking for a comment, a statement. They want a story. They deserve a story. But from an investigative standpoint, from a police standpoint, they don't deserve the story that is going to negatively affect the investigation down the road. And we were still very, very actively doing that investigation for a period of about 2 weeks before we were actually ordered to give it up. And during that period of time, we gave the media very little. In retrospect, I still think it was the right thing to do under the circumstances. A lot of people would disagree with that. So what happened in that particular case was that when we didn't provide the media with what they wanted, they took bits and pieces of things that they thought they knew, things that they knew, and things that they were told that were not accurate, and put them together in all kinds of different forms, depending on which media outlet it was. And that became the narrative. That became the story. And very little of it bore any resemblance to the actual truth. And the problem with that is that once that animal gets out of the cage, there's no putting it back.
That's right.
And it's often said that, you know, the media can get something wrong on page one. And when they do the retraction finally, which were very few and far between in this particular case, it's buried on page 27.
Absolutely.
6 to 10 weeks later. So,
that's right.
You know, what little retraction or correction there was throughout the long term was never very serious, never very heartfelt or sincere. And quite frankly, they had other fish to fry by the time they got to correcting it. So, so you're never going to get, from a media standpoint, you're very seldom going to get a retraction, and probably just as seldom never going to get a clarification or correction. So if it, when the media gets it wrong, when the media takes and creates that story or that narrative, it's out there and it's not going away.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what happened without going into, because there were so many media outlets there and covering it and so many different wrong stories going on. We couldn't refute them without coming out. And when we finally did come out with our own investigative impression or version of what happened, they blew us off and said, no, that's not the way it happened, because we've already printed something else or broadcast something else. So they almost didn't want to hear what we had to say, partially because of that. And I think partially because the narrative was already out there that this was a racially motivated incident and it had to be the way they said it was. And that we were trying to make something up to make it something that it wasn't, and which was untrue.
Now, you know, the other thing that Mike, you know, talked about before we got off the last podcast was the docuseries by some individuals about the Zimmerman case. Did you have a chance to watch that? And what was your opinion on it?
I have not watched it. And I'll be very honest with you. I know people who have, and people who have watched it who were familiar with the investigation, and I've heard that it was somewhat accurate to some of the issues, but it's politically and motivated by individuals that want to project a certain narrative that, again, probably while they're not wrong, it's a certain narrative.
That's right.
And I don't know, because I didn't watch it, and in all fairness to them, I didn't watch it, so I can't comment completely on it other than what I've heard. I don't think it tells a whole story.
Gotcha. And then I'm changing channels real quick. Now, you and Don West in that trial, I mean, somewhat operated on the opposite sides, correct? And since then, I mean, and it doesn't mean that you guys weren't aligned eventually, but since then, you guys have become, you know, friends, correct?
Yes, and to go back into history, actually, Don West was a defense attorney in the Orlando area, has been a defense attorney in the Orlando area for, I guess, all of his career. I've run into Don periodically over the years in different cases as I came up as a deputy sheriff locally and then with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. When he became second chair in the Zimmerman case, typically law enforcement is not allied, or they typically don't agree with the defense. I mean, our job is to put people in prison and their job is to get them off. Mm-hmm. That's the American judicial system, and God bless us for that. So it was unusual that we got to the point pre-trial where we were doing depositions, and I remember I had a 5-hour deposition with the defense team, and there were prosecutors in there who were trying to put George Zimmerman in prison. And I was caught between both of them because the Sanford Police Department and our own state attorney's office, which eventually did not prosecute that case, did not believe there was sufficient probable cause to charge him with anything. Mm-hmm. And we were comfortable with that. The members of the Sanford Police Department, the investigative team and those support people, the evidence folks and everything else, I guess the best way to put it was that, first of all, we were non-aligned. I mean, you know, whatever happens in the trial. You can't necessarily change or help that. However, we presented facts and circumstances based on our investigation that did not support the prosecution, but fully supported the defense side of the case. And I think at the end of the day, that's a little unusual for law enforcement to end up having to do that. The prosecution in the case eventually called very few as few as they could call of the Sanford Police Department, because they knew, I think, that the testimony that we would give would be more supportive of Zimmerman's innocence and would eventually probably support an acquittal rather than a conviction. So yes, that's a long way of getting about to the answer. Yes. Don West and I were unusual allies, I guess, in that case.
Yeah. And then, hey, and Mike, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. So we're going to go ahead and, because he has a couple of others, there's so many different sections or the four principles. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have you walk him through that and talk about the four principles.
Okay. You want to start that now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that series of articles that came out, and what we're talking about is the principles of concealed carry. Mm-hmm. That he broke down. There were five articles, but they were broken down into four different principles. And the first one started with mentality. And then you had mentality, you had our mindset, training. Let me pull
education.
Education and judgment, which I think. Right. I think that especially, and you hear a lot about mindset and you hear a lot about training, and you do hear a lot about education. You don't hear a lot of talk about judgment when you're talking about these types of articles or theories or principles on concealed carry, which I thought was really interesting because our members, a lot of the incidents are going to be based on your judgment at that time. So
yeah.
I thought it was a great series. And like Stan said earlier, we got a lot of feedback on it. And I don't think we talked about that at all before because he hadn't written those before, right?
Right.
Let's go through each one, just kind of the key points you were talking about. And we'll start with mindset and then move on to the other ones.
Well, I think the first part, mindset, is understanding the necessity to have the proper understanding of why you carry concealed. Okay, and that means to me, anyway, to Bob O'Connor, that means I know that if I'm carrying a concealed, the reason I'm doing that is for protection of myself or others, not to threaten people, not to feel important because I've got a gun on and somebody else doesn't. If you're doing that, you're doing it for the wrong reason. And one of the points I make throughout that series is concealed carry isn't for everybody because of that. Okay. So the mindset portion of it is, you need to understand that you're caring for one reason, and that is self-defense and defense of others. Everything else is not worth caring for, in my personal opinion. And the other side of that is you need to realize that when you pull that trigger, it is for one reason only, for the same reason, for your mm-hmm. self-defense and for others. The other understanding is you need to understand that you may have to take a life to save a life.
That's right.
And that's a hard thing for people to do. We are not built to kill people. Right. The average individual is not trained to kill people. And mentally, physically, emotionally, all those other things. You can be trained by the military. You can be trained by a police department. You can be, you know, there are ways to get trained, but intrinsically, we are not built out there to kill people. So when you take that type of action, when you take that ultimate action to pull the trigger, you need to understand that you are doing it. You're taking a life potentially to save a life. So that was the mindset part of it.
And I think that's easy for us to say, or those who have been in law enforcement or military, because they've had training specifically dealing with uses of force. But for a lot of people who don't have that training or that background, that might be harder to understand. And I think a lot of people think about mindset and generally think about, about the mindset of having to take action. But again, I think that's something that is really understood by those who have had training or daily experience in that.
Mm-hmm.
So
no, I agree.
So yeah, I think that's, and you see that a lot in different, like I said, different articles and stuff, but, you did have a little bit more detail on your mindset of what other most people just say it's generally the mindset of being able to act, where you had said it goes beyond that, and you know it's dealing with those actions as well. Now the second was education, right? It was mindset, education, training, judgment, or was it mindset, training, education?
Right. Education and training. So education is, to me, the second thing. If you want to carry concealed and you've never done it before, you know, there are a lot of things that go into understanding why and how you're going to do that. And education included educating yourself on the law, educating yourself on the laws, the concealed carry laws, the use of force laws, all those laws that are going to affect you if and when you decide to carry, okay? And those go partial. They kind of support that whole mindset thing, and that is, there's a law that, you know, a law in your state, wherever you are, that says how you can use and when you can use deadly force as a civilian, as a citizen. You need to know what those are. I don't know what they are in California. I don't know what they are. They're probably pretty much the same as they are here in Florida. But I don't know. And, so wherever you are, you need to know what that law is. You need to know what the law is for carrying that weapon. You may have an open carry state. You may be in a concealed carry state. You may be in New York, and they don't like you to carry at all. So you need to know what those restrictions are. Secondly, part of that was educating yourself about the type of weapon you want to carry. Becoming familiar with, not, and this is separate from training, but educating yourself about the types of weapons there are that are good concealed carry weapons as opposed to not so good concealed carry weapons. And part of that is also your own body, your own size and the environment you're in. I live in Florida, so I'm in shorts and t-shirts 9 months out of the year. When I'm walking around the street and I want to carry concealed, I want something that's comfortable for me. And that was part of that whole educating yourself. Educate yourself about what you want to carry, how you're going to carry it. And most importantly, don't get caught up in somebody else's favorite way to carry or their favorite gun or their favorite whatever, because what works for them might not work for you.
Right.
Okay.
So next.
Next one?
The training.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Training. Okay. So training, you know, I think I started that out with let's go to the range, or I finished education with Let's Go to the Range. Because if you're not ready to go to the range and become proficient with the weapon that you're going to carry or weapons you're going to carry, there's no sense in carrying. I'm a firm believer in, if you're not shooting that weapon, if you're not firing that weapon, if you're not proficient with manipulating it, handling it, carrying it concealed, and doing so in a safe manner, and breaking it down and cleaning it and maintaining that weapon on a regular basis, you're missing the boat. The other thing I talked about in training is manipulating that weapon and handling it every day. I was a cop for over 40 years, and I handled a weapon literally every day of my life for 40 some odd years. So that's second nature to me. I can pick up a weapon, and the first thing I do is safety check it and do all those things that you're supposed to do with that. Somebody who isn't used to doing that might not do that every day. The other thing is just being familiar enough with that weapon that it becomes second nature to you to understand where it is, how it's being carried and everything else. So every day, and I still do this every day, when I get up in the morning, before I leave the house, if I pick up my weapon to take it with me, I safety check it. I pop the magazine out, I unload it, I triple check it. And the other thing I do is I take a couple of dry fire shots with it. I take a couple of dry fire shots, I pick out a place on the wall, again, making sure I've triple checked my weapon to make sure it's empty so I don't have a hole in the wall. I dry fire a few times, make sure that I can get my sight picture, make sure that it's the functionality of that weapon is such that when I carry it out on the street, if I need it, it's going to be there. It's going to be ready to go. That also gets you familiar with that weapon by using it every day and manipulating it every day. And that's part of training.
You know, we talked last week with Dave Spalding, and we were talking about different drills, and dry fire drills is one of the ones that he mentioned. And I actually ordered I ordered G-Sight, G-Sight.com, but they have the rounds cases that you can put in that have the laser in that every time the hammer strikes it. So I'm interested to try that when that comes in. But that's a good point, because we just talked about that last week with Dave Spalding. Now, we didn't go into the checking the magazines and functionality and all that, but those are some great points, especially for someone who's new to concealed carry, may not be used to carrying daily.
Right.
So, that covered the first four. Now, the last article was the one that, like I said earlier, was the most impressive to me, or the one that stood out the most to me, because you don't typically see it in other systems or other when people talk about this, and that's judgment.
So judgment is, and I think I said in the article, I'm not looking at it, but I think I said judgment's like a cloud. Okay, you can't touch it, you can't feel it, you can't quantify it at all. Judgment, you can't train judgment, you can't buy it. You develop it and you have it. And we all do things in our lives. We all use good judgment. We all use bad judgment. You can count the number of times a week that you use bad judgment. Maybe you can't count the number of weeks you use bad judgment. I don't know. But we've all done it. Now, I think I used the example of running red lights, or running, you're running late, your kid's got to get to school or softball practice or whatever, and you run a red light, or you do something else, you cut a corner in your life, that could potentially end up as a disaster. Fortunately for you, it didn't, you know. Fortunately for me, when I ran that red light, there wasn't a cop sitting there, you know, watching. And fortunately for me, somebody didn't come through from the opposite direction and hit me. Okay, but we all do those things, intentionally or not. And when they happen, you look back on it and you say, gee, I wish I hadn't done that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and there are 100 other different judgment calls that you make every day, whether it's cutting a light too close or anything. I mean, we all do them, and our lives are different. We do them professionally, we do them personally, we do them within our families and everything else. But judgment is the one thing, and the one thing that I've noticed in every LEO-involved shooting investigation that I ever was involved with, every civilian shooting I was ever involved with, any kind of use of force situation, is a judgment call, because everybody has to make that decision of whether to pull the trigger or not. That is judgment. And and I've investigated young officers who don't have, I think the least amount of experience of an officer who I investigated an LEO involved shooting was like a week and a half. He had been on the job out of training.
Wow.
And he got involved in a shooting. Yeah. And, you know, so he doesn't have a whole lot of street experience. He doesn't have a whole lot he didn't have prior military. He didn't have prior police somewhere else. He was a brand new rookie out on the street, and he'd been out of training, you know, for probably 10 days, 12 days, something like that. I don't recall exactly, but it was a good shoot. I don't know that I would have shot, but I wasn't in that situation. And so you look at that judgment, the judgment that officer used, and sometimes you compare it to, would I have done that? Yeah, maybe not. But judgment is perspective. Judgment is fleeting. And that officer who had a week and a half, 2 weeks out of training on working on his own had different perspective than I had. I respect his perspective. He pulled the trigger. It was a legal shoot. It was a good shoot.
Mm-hmm.
I might not have used that same level of force, but he was authorized by law, and he was okay in having done it. Mm-hmm. But I look at those things. I use that in my life, and I tried to bring that forth in the article that, you know, we all have different levels of training, experience, personal, all the personal inputs that go into making you, you. And that includes good and bad things that happen in your life, experiences you might have, and you might have had a previous experience that caused you to be the concealed carrier you are today.
Mm-hmm.
And that all goes into that judgment package, I think, that we're trying to show. But my point was, in all of it, is use your best judgment. Don't shoot somebody. Don't use force because you can, because you have a gun, because you're carrying, because you have a concealed carry license, doesn't mean you should use force. Sometimes the best thing to do is to back off and be a good witness. And in that article, in that portion of it, I used one really, really telling example. And that was of the general, a Marine Corps general who, and this happened relatively early in my career. I was an investigator, but I got called out to a scene late one night of a shooting. And this Marine Corps general had just a decorated guy. He's long dead now, I'm sure. There was a car out in front of his house at 11:30 at night. And with two guys in it. And rather than calling the sheriff's office, he walked out with his .45 and popped a couple of rounds into the front end of the car.
Wow.
for no good reason at all, other than he didn't like the fact that they're out in front of his house. And I end up having to arrest the guy. I arrested the guy, and he says, if I wanted to kill them, I'd have killed them. I put those rounds exactly where I wanted to put them.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty impressed, really. I mean, in retrospect, 30-some-odd years later, I guess, I'm pretty impressed with, a 70-some-odd-year-old guy who put two rounds that you could cover with a half dollar in the front quarter panel of the car, so those guys would go away. Well, they went away pretty quickly. and fortunately, nobody got hurt. But, I ended up putting the guy in jail that night. And here's a decorated former Marine Corps general. I mean, God bless him, for everything he did for our country. But you can't go doing that. That was poor judgment. Hugely poor judgment. And how many, he's a Marine Corps general. You can't tell me the man doesn't have great judgment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he used poor judgment. So if it can happen to him, it can happen to all of us.
Absolutely. Hey, and then also before you started the series, you had one section that you covered about commitment. Can you cover that real quick?
Well, that was kind of a recurring theme, I think, throughout the whole thing. And that is, when you decide to carry, you need to make it a commitment. You need to make a commitment to yourself and to the people around you that you're going to carry. You're going to carry safely. You're going to follow all the rules. You're going to learn. You're going to use those four principles. Okay. You're going to have that mindset. Part of that commitment is a mindset to carry, and to know what your responsibilities are carrying. You're going to educate yourself about the law, about a weapon, about the comfort, about the concealment, about how you're going to carry and carry on a regular basis. You're going to commit yourself to staying trained, to being familiar with your handgun, to being just overall prepared from a physical standpoint when you walk out the door with that handgun and walking into public with it. And finally, a commitment to using good judgment, a commitment to not use force too quickly if you don't have to, and to use generally good judgment that we hope you have to go out there. And if you have to use force, use it wisely, and then get help and do everything you need to do afterwards. So the commitment is all of those things, and it's all those things, all those four tenets wrapped up into one.
Awesome. Hey Bob, can you hear me?
Are you there?
No, I'm sorry, Mike. Yeah, I was. Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I cut out for a minute. I was talking. I said the thing about it, the thing that I really liked about this series was that it was consistent all the way through. The commitment with just the principles in general, but then with each one, and I think it's very valuable. I thought, and I still think this, that really should be kind of the cornerstone of what our membership is built on, as far as the principles, with somebody. And it doesn't matter whether you are, like you're a general in the Marine Corps, or if you're a 20-year veteran of a police department, or if you're brand new to concealed carry. These are things that have to be, maintained all through your, just like during your career, you have to have, as a police officer, you have to have continued education. And that's the thing. I mean, whether you're a lawyer or a doctor or a police officer, you have continued education. And a lot of times it's the same thing over and over again. And we tend to think, oh my gosh, how many times do we have to be talked about this? But, when I was in, it was all mental health. Every year was a mental health training issue. But you know, those things have to be reminded, and they have to be constant, and there has to be a commitment, you know, to those as you go, and you can't get lax on those. So I think it's think it's very important. And what I would like to see is some more articles kind of taking that one step further, maybe looking at different examples. And we'll talk about that. And we've already talked about that, about kind of some of the plans we have with that. So hopefully we'll see some more articles coming from Bob soon that will kind of take this a little bit further.
Well, I look forward to doing them. And you know, for me, Mike and Stan, I when we first discussed doing these articles, one of the most important things to me is, and I don't care whether you're a gun guy and you have 15, 20, 30 handguns at home and you swap them out every day, or if you're like me, I've got one gun that I carry, and I've carried that same handgun off duty for 6 or 7 years now. Okay. I'm proficient with it. I know what it's going to do. I know when it's going to, you know, where it is. It's like a part of me. And I really don't care if you're a gun guy and you want to change guns every 2 days, or like your underwear every day or whatever. It really doesn't matter, as long as you're proficient with it and you have that commitment to be safe with it and to do all those things that you need to do. And every time you change handguns, you need to kind of reevaluate those four principles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And particularly education and training. Maybe the first and the last are consistent, but that education and training is those are important when you change handguns too.
Right.
Because I think it's important that, well, does this one have a thumb safety on it or not? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the last thing I carried was a Glock and it didn't have an external safety. Now this one's a Smith and it does. Mm-hmm. And do I carry it on safe or do I carry it on unsafe? So all those things go into like the muscle memory and all those things that we talk about in training. And you don't want to get out there and be fumbling with your handgun because you didn't carry this yesterday or last week. Now you're carrying something new. And I know I've segued away, but I think all these are important issues.
Oh yeah, definitely. And we talked about that last week too with Dave, you know, on carry position, what you're used to carrying. Right. And you made a kind of comment that I thought was interesting. You said, you know, and we all have as a previous law enforcement have carried firearms to the point to where it really is an extension of us. I mean, it's not, we see it as a part of ourselves. And,
right.
I know when you get away from that, or to somebody new come that might be getting into concealed carry now, it might be very, seem awkward at times, uncomfortable. But that's the things that you have to work through to, make it to where it is eventually just an extension of you and not, you know, this thing that you have to deal with all the time.
Right.
People say it's the new, you know, getting to your new normal or so forth. So, well, good. Stan, you got anything else?
No, I really appreciate Bob. I mean, all of his time and, you know, being able to, you know, break down, you know, different areas and share from your experience, you know, from being in law enforcement for over 30 years. So I applaud you again, sir. And thanks for your time.
Listen, thank you for having me. I always enjoy sharing, you know, my experience and my thoughts on it. And I certainly do appreciate you including me in the Orlando event last week. That was just wonderful. And again, if for the listeners, if you haven't read or heard Steve's tale there, it is well worth sitting down and either reading it or listening to it and learning from his perspective, a purely self-defense situation, what he had to deal with. And thank you guys for inviting me and letting him share that with me. as well as the rest of the group. I think everybody in that room was enthralled by what he had to say that night.
I agree with that.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. And I appreciate, thank you for your service and for your coming on. And, you know, Bob's going to be one that is probably going to be on quite a few shows in the future and hopefully more on our site. So, all right, Bob, take care, man. Have a good one.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye, buddy.
So, yeah, bye. Stan, I think that Steve and Bob, there's going to be Steve. Moses. I think those are people who are going to be on our show. So the listeners will probably get used to those guys over time because I think they're going to have a lot of input on this, you know, in the future. So,
yeah. And you know, and they're close, but they're still, you know, they still have their own perspective, which I like.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right, Stan. Well, another good call and take care of yourself.
I'll see you soon. Take care, too. Bye, buddy. Thank you.